This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, Black Power, an international concept. Tonight's guest, Deputy Chairman of SNCC's International Affairs Committee, Irving Davis. Night Call is your program. Share your opinions and ideas with the rest of the country. Speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call in New York City from anywhere in North America. Here are Night Call's special phone numbers. From the East and Midwest, call collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-4300. And from the New York area at 866-5010. Now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. For the past couple of years, we have really heard a great deal about the black and white crisis in this country. There are many black leaders who call the problem white racism and offered various solutions to this, but on a kind of narrow basis. Few, perhaps with the exception of Malcolm X, have viewed the black struggle as something going far beyond racism or beyond this country. Mr. Irving Davis, who is my guest tonight, is the chairman of Eastern Region and deputy administrator of International Affairs of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. He has just returned from a long tour of the international arena and came back with some very interesting observations. For one, Mr. Davis sees the black problem not as racism, but as one caused by a system of economic exploitation. I believe Mr. Davis also thinks that a system of American international imperialism is causing increasing anti-U.S. feeling abroad. Black people here need the help of those countries that also reject the American empire that is massively wheeling and dealing abroad. Naturally, a lot of people don't agree with Mr. Davis, and I imagine we'll be hearing from some of them tonight. Mr. Davis is calling in from Newark, New Jersey. Mr. Davis, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Dale.
And thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
Mr. Davis, we'll begin our conversation tonight on black power and the international concept by asking, what do you mean when you say that the problem in this country is not racism, it's the system?
Well, I think that there's a twofold explanation to that, Dale. First of all, the problem here is not racism. What I say is that it's not totally racism. And I think that once black people in this country and people of color begin to look beyond just the borders of the United States and begin to look into the international arena, then they begin to get a clear understanding that it is a third world that's being exploited, and that the number one country that's at the top of this exploitation is the United States. And then when we look at it, we can't just talk about the United States government and say that that's it. We have to see the forces that operate behind the United States government. And those forces are the system that we speak about. And when we check the record, we find that the power, the economical power of the world is in the hand of about 60 families. And those 60 families are here in the United States. And that's what we mean by the system.
So it's the 60 families and their fortunes and their contacts, which is the system as we know it.
Yes, it is. And I don't think that enough people actually understand and examine that in this total concept. For example, we look at Chase Manhattan Bank, which is controlled by the Rockefeller family. Now, we only look at Chase Manhattan Bank and what it is doing here in the United States. For example, not too long ago, you had the example of some computer operators, black computer operators, who took their case to the New York City Commission on Human Rights, charging the Chase Manhattan Bank with segregation in the areas of employment, in the areas of working conditions, in the areas of training, in the areas of incentive allowances. Now, that organization or group of people just addressed themselves to the problem and the exploitation which Chase Manhattan Bank is carrying on here in New York City in the United States. But what should have been pointed out in conjunction with that is that Chase Manhattan Bank was the number one financier of the apartheid government of South Africa, and that they still have a tremendous vested interest in that apartheid government, which is oppressing millions and millions of black people in South Africa today. And not enough people know these things.
Well, assuming that we were able to enlighten or to inform most people about the great fortunes that have been amassed by these 60 families, and I think we had a guest on some time ago when we talked about the Mr. Lundberg, where we talked about the rich and the super rich, but assuming that we could inform the people of what is happening, doesn't the average person feel somewhat frustrated in his attempts to make changes?
Yes, I think that the average person does feel frustrated. And one of the reasons for the average person's frustration is because they don't have a complete knowledge of what the system is and how the system operates. I don't think that they know enough about the international arena and what is going on. They don't understand that the vested interests outside of the country, particularly in the third world, in Africa, Asia, and Latin America, that the vested interest there of the United States powers and the imperialist powers is far greater, and they pay far more attention in that vested interest than they do of the exploitation here inside the countries.
Well, now, this exploitation that is going on, is this going on with the sanctioning of the American government?
Definitely. But what happens is that the reason why we can't see it, the reason why it's such an insidious plot, is because the United States government very seldom puts its name directly in these various projects. What it does is that it has extensions, or it uses a front business organization, or it controls the politics going on, say, for example, in Senegal, where they control the politics of that government. And naturally, when you control the politics, you control everything else, the economic, the social, the cultural, etc., of a country. And enough of us don't understand exactly what's going on. And like you said, you pointed out about the rich and the super rich. There's another book called The American Challenge, which tells the various methods that the United States government uses in its influence and control of other countries of the world.
Are whites being exploited by the same system?
Yes, definitely, because whites feel that they have power based purely upon their color. And this isn't true. And I think that when we talk about that small minority in this country that controls and pulls the purse strings of three-quarters of the earth, that this is more outstanding than anything we could say. For example, if white people had power, then why is it that white people had to get out into the streets and say hell no to the war in Vietnam? There isn't a single person in this country that voted to go to war in Vietnam, and yet we are at war with Vietnam. So when we talk about power, if you don't have power to control your destiny, power to control your fate, power to direct your own actions, then you actually have no power. And I think many white people suffer from this delusion of grandeur.
Now, if there are many businesses, or if there are businesses in America with interest in Europe and through other parts of the country or other parts of the world, and if they are affecting a program that is causing this exploitation, my question is this: where does the black person go from here?
Well, I think that the black man, first of all, has to begin to understand how these forces operate outside of the country. I think he has to understand, and in his understanding, somehow link himself up with what is happening to the people of the third world, which comprise three-quarters of the earth. And in that understanding, he'll begin to relate to the third world, Asia, Africa, and Latin America, who definitely have the natural resources, who mainly, primarily lack the skills. Now, one of the programs at SNCC has been trying to get off the ground for about 3 years, but this program has been continuously sabotaged by the U.S. government, and I have no hesitation in saying this, it is a fact. Is the Afro-American Skills Bank. And that's where we try to recruit, because we know, for example, that a lot of black people in this country have gone to school, have taken trades, etc., and have had no outlets. Many of them have wanted to become engineers and mathematicians and things of this nature, and have had no outlets, have not had the opportunity in this country. And so that they have these skills. And we say that these skills belong to Asia, Africa, and Latin America to help in their development, because one of the things they desperately need are skills. And so what we meant to try to do was recruit college graduates, technical school graduates, etc., and tried to get them to make a commitment to go to Africa or Asia for 1, 2, or 3 years and carry those skills to the country to assist. And this, as I said, this program has been continuously sabotaged. Now, I can go into reasons, ways how they sabotaged it, if you prefer.
Well, in the country today where we say that there is a shortage of skilled people, the fact that there would be a program being promoted to ask skilled people from America to go to foreign countries, wouldn't this cause somewhat of a drain on our resources here at home?
Well, I don't think so, Dale. I think that what we have to begin to do is, as a people trying to liberate ourselves, is have peripheral vision and not just tunnel vision. And I think that when we have peripheral vision, we begin to understand what Malcolm was talking about when he talked about internationalizing the struggle. As far as I can see it, one hand washes the other, because the system, the same system that oppresses us in this country, is oppressing 3/4 of the earth. And when we talk about attacking the system must be attacked from without as well as attacked from within. It's like a double-edged sword. And I think that if we forget this, very often we become, you know, if we don't clearly understand this twofold concept, that very often our movement right in this country could become stagnated. I do not feel that it is a drain, because first of all, we're talking about people going for a period of 1 or 2 or 3 years and contributing their skills. We're not talking about people migrating there for the rest of their life. And in conjunction with that, I think that the way that the youth in this country are developing more and more each day, that there's going to be a sufficient number of our people to go into the black communities and uplift the black communities by bringing their skills. So I don't feel it's a drain.
Then if we are going to discuss the black problem in America, you do not see it as just a domestic problem. You see it as part of an international problem.
Definitely. Not just an international problem, but it is definitely an international plot. And I think that we have to understand that.
This is Night Call in New York. Our conversation tonight, Black Power, International Concept. Our guest tonight is Mr. Irving Davis, and he's calling in from Newark, New Jersey. And our telephone numbers here in New York, if you're calling locally, is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. If you're calling from the East or the Midwest, it's area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. If you're calling from the West, it's area code 212-749-4300. That's area code 212-749-4300. We'll take our first call tonight from Wilberforce, Ohio. Mr. Miller is hearing Night Call over WCSU-FM. Mr. Miller?
Yes.
How are you, sir?
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I want to ask Brother Davis something about the black Muslim movement in the United States in reference to black power. It seems to me that as you start off talking about black power, it deals with the exterior as well as the interior and the mind and so on. And I'd like to know how he feels about this movement in the... It seems that they present the image, you know, of, as opposed to wearing a dashiki or something like this, of being clean cut, reflecting somewhat of an aristocracy, as far as I'm concerned, and also being clean shaven and you know, with hair short, and so on.
Well, I'm not sure that I totally understand your question, but. I would like to say this, is that...
Wait a minute, Brother Davis.
Yes, sir.
It's like this, you know. Well, I feel that nobody in the U.S. can say that Stokely and Rapp didn't help in the sense of making black people feel that they were truly beautiful, you see? Mm-hmm. And I feel that if anything is meaningful to people, it has to also be an expression of themselves. Mm-hmm. And what I'm trying to get an answer to is, do you feel that this kind of cleaning up and reflecting middle class value, shall we say, is detrimental to the movement?
Well, no, because I think that we have to be concerned about a new set of values. I think that a culture has to teach a people a new set of values, man. And because we are in the most decadent country on the face of this earth, and I mean, that's a fact, I stand on that, and because we are definitely integrated within this decadent society, and that's a fact too, that we have picked up many bad habits. So a culture has to address itself to a new set of values, and I think that becomes very key when we talk about what type of life are we going to have after the confrontation. so that I think that the contributions of the Muslims is very credited, and the concept of cleanliness and so forth and so on is definitely something that we
have
to address.
You're not saying the Afros and Dashikis are not clean.
Pardon?
Then what are you saying? Are you saying that Afros and Dashikis as we know them are not clean?
No, I'm not saying Afro and Dashikis are not clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that any expression that results to culture is a very warranted and a very good expression. But I'm also saying that a culture has to teach people other things. It has to address itself to the political aspects of life as well as the cultural aspects. No, I'm not putting down dashikis and afros. I'm just saying that it has to be more than that.
Well, Mr. Miller, you stated that cleanliness was a middle class value. Is that true?
Now this becomes a hang up after a while. But what I was saying, I wasn't necessarily.
Now I'm just asking for the statement because I'd like clarification on that.
I was not saying that cleanliness is a middle class value. That's a misnomer, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, I see.
But you know, when a person speaks of cleanliness and then still talks about, you know, shaving your hair off and so on, you know, then they've added something on to this first, you know, clause that they made, you know, cleanliness, and it gives the whole thing a bad connotation, as far as I'm concerned. You know, in other words, I wouldn't like to see us fall back into this thing of going to the barbershop every 2 weeks, you know, because, you know, of being ashamed of long hair and this kind of thing. Because our society has always been a long hair society, you know. And this proves that for a long time the black man was actually ashamed of his hair and that he wasn't even in vogue with his white society, as a matter of fact.
I don't agree with that at all, but we don't have time to really explore that because rather than talk about the customs or the styles of one hair, we want to talk about black power and the international concept. Well, we thank you for calling, sir. Thank you so much. This is Night Call in New York. We return to our guest, Mr. Irving Davis, and our conversation on black power and the international concept following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Irving Davis after station identification.
If you left school and you're between 16 and 22, Job Corps wants to give you a chance to start again. A chance to learn the skills that can help you get a good job. Maybe as a typist, a practical nurse, a receptionist, just about anything. And while you're learning, you'll be living at a Job Corps center. You'll get free medical and dental care, clean clothes, your own bed to sleep in, and 3 square meals a day. Job Corps will even pay you while you're learning. See your state employment office or write Job Corps, Washington, D.C. Job Corps will give you a chance. Just for once, give yourself a chance.
Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to guest Irving Davis about black power as an international concept. All Night Call collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And this time out to Omaha, Nebraska, Mr. Cornell is hearing Night Call over KBON. Mr. Cornell?
Hello, Dal.
How are you?
Oh, wonderful. This is fine. You got a great show going tonight.
Thank you very much, sir.
Mr. Davis, it's been so fine to have you on. You're most informative, and there's some things that you are saying, and we want to continue to hear you that will be helpful to all of us out here, and the problem that you're speaking about primarily. You did say one day that we have a group around the table here tonight out in Omaha, Mr. Davis, and we said what prompted my call was this, and I know you're right, I know you're true, and I know you're doing the right thing, but you did make one remark, Mr. Davis, when you mentioned imperialist, us imperialists here. I think perhaps I belong in that category myself. I'm not sure. But that was a thing that prompted this call into New York tonight, Mr. Davis. How do you define an imperialist? An imperialist? If you please, sir.
Yes, well, I consider an imperialist any one of the Western powers in particular who participate in the exploitation, the economic, the social, and the political exploitation of another country. Now, I mean, that's a simple definition if you want me to go into
No, that's all right. We haven't exploited anybody out here between Chicago and Denver. We don't feel that way. But an imperialist, Mr. Davis, and bless your soul, it's a dirty word because we hear it so much from the communists, Mr. Davis. Mm-hmm. Everything that Khrushchev says or from Moscow is the dirty imperialist, you see. It rubs off on us, and some of it's on all of us out here now. It's on me right now. They call us imperialists. Well, we're not imperialists.
And Mr. Davis, do you view Russia as an imperialistic country?
No, I can't say that Russia is an imperialistic country. I think she has strong imperialistic tendencies at this time, but I can't see her as being an imperialistic country.
Are you a communist, Mr. Davis?
No, I'm not, but I'd like to ask, are you one also?
No, I'm not, sir.
What makes you think that I might be a communist?
I didn't say that, but you used that term, sir.
No, I think that
you're
wrong.
We think you're a great American.
Excuse me, no, I'm not a great American. What I am is I am a black liberation fighter struggling for the freedom of my people.
You're a great American.
People all over this world. I am not a great American.
You love America, don't you?
I beg your pardon?
You love America, don't you?
I don't love America.
How is that?
I beg your pardon?
You do love America, don't you?
I do not love America.
Our voice is crossed. I'm so sorry.
No, he said he did not love America, but thank you very much for calling, sir. Thank you. Mr. Davis.
Yes.
In reference to Mr. Cornell's statement, so that we can clarify that, in your term, you said you did not love America. Why do you not love America?
I do not love America in its present state. I do not love America for the exploitation of man and the destruction of man. I do not love America for what it professes to be and is not. Now, if America could live up to its constitution, if America could live up to what it claims to be, then we can talk about love for America. But I can't love America for what it is doing and what it has done to my people.
All right, we'll take our next call from Charlottesville, Virginia. Mr. Peterson is hearing Night Call over WINA. Mr. Peterson?
Yes, I'm on the line. What countries around the world have you traveled in recently, Mr. Davis?
I've been in France, I've been in Sweden, I've been in Czechoslovakia.
Uh-huh. Now, I know that in the socialist countries, why they have a great deal of interest in minority movements. And could you, do you have any idea of what sort of activities and institutions and schools and colleges they may have there in connection with international minority movements?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question. Could you say it again?
Well, any institutions, schools, colleges, activities for foreigners and local people that are oriented toward international minority movements and affairs. Do you know anything about that?
No, I don't.
I see. Do you, what qualifications do you think that the Czechoslovakians and the Soviets, for example, have to interest themselves and advise on American problems in the field of minority movements and minority problems?
I'm sorry.
Does your question stem from the conversation tonight, sir?
No, I was just because I understand that Mr. Davis...
Well, he visited the countries, but he did not give us the impression at all in his answer that these countries were doing any of that. He just merely, you asked him what countries he had visited, and he stated the countries.
Well, I just had the impression that he knew something about this sort of activity, and that's the reason I asked.
Well, I think you were misled, sir.
Right. All right, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling, sir. Well, Mr. Davis, what was your reactions when you visited these various countries?
Well, Bill, I didn't name all of the countries because I didn't know exactly what he was driving at. I visited several other countries, amongst them was Cuba. And in the Cuban, I was most impressed with what I saw in Cuba. I was most impressed with the concept of humanity, which I spoke about earlier, and how there is a legitimate concern for mankind, and not just for the Cuban people, but for people all over the world who are being exploited and being oppressed. I think one of the sterling examples of this was Che Guevara. I mean, we talk about, you hear people in the country talking about Che Guevara, but I don't think that a lot of people knew, nor totally understand when I point this out, that Che Guevara was an Argentinian, who fought in the Cuban Revolution, as well as fought in the Congo, and died in Bolivia fighting for the freedom of oppressed people. And I mean, do you kind of get what I'm saying there, Dale, that I think Che personifies the feeling, the understanding of this new man and this new concept of humanity and concern for mankind. I don't know if I can...
I understand what you're saying, but I was concerned somewhat about American people who sit back and who are very concerned with the fact that airplanes or that... that our airlines or airplanes are being hijacked and going into Cuba. And I think that the possible danger of a plane possibly going down during the time that one of these things are being hijacked and the discomfort and the fear of the people on the plane, that this does not aid in any way in giving Cuba any kind of decent picture.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you have to look at it that there's a dialectic to that, Dale. I mean, because one has to stop and raise the question, why are these people going to Cuba? You know, why are these people taking such a desperate chance as to hijack a plane? And then that raises another question of why should people have to hijack a plane to go to Cuba or any place else? If everything that the people in control professes to be true here in America, why should they have fear of Americans seeing other things that they claim are so horrible? I mean, I just can't understand this. What does the truth, if it is the truth, have to fear but fear itself? So why are there restrictions? Why do people have to resort to such horrible tactics in order to get to see another country?
Then you're saying that the American government should not fear to let anybody go to Cuba who so desires.
Cuba, China, Korea, or any place else. I mean, if what it professes to be true is true.
All right, we'll take our next call from Tucson, Arizona. Mr. Gutman is hearing Night Call over KTUC. Mr. Gutman?
Yes, Mr. Shields. I'm kind of in the dark as to... what Mr. Davis talked about, because we have a conflict, there's another program on. Did you travel, Mr. Davis, to the Congo while you were overseas?
No, I didn't. I didn't travel to the Congo.
I see. So I'm afraid that what I'm going to ask...
why don't you ask it? I mean, perhaps I know a little bit about it.
Well, let me preface my remarks by saying that a report in the October 67 issue of Ramparts by a fallen mercenary operator in the Congo describes a power struggle there between the American and Belgian governments or business interests of these and certain other countries in order to exploit to the maximum possible extent existing business and mining development or potential thereof. And to do this, the CIA paid mercenaries to loot, also to kill any Congolese who was revolting against the practices of or wishes to topple the Congolese government. And Belgium, on the other hand, pays mercenaries to do similarly, but they do it to topple the Congo government to put Chumbe in. So I was going to ask if you had gone to the Congo, whether such practices still exist, that is, if the power struggle is still going on, and if the to what extent the CIA is involved in the Congo now.
Yes, well, as I said, I haven't been to the Congo. However, I've seen reports on this, and for the most part, most of what you say is true. I mean, it's known that the Belgium and the American government both are willing and dealing in the Congo. After all, Patrice Lumumba's death, we can point to that, was definitely CIA-backed. And recently, you had an incident with Pierre Mulele, who was the leader of, who had fought in the frontiers of the Congo for 5 years after Lumumba's death. Now, Sean Bean and Kasabubu and all the rest of those puppets played a role in Patrice Lumumba's death. And yet these people are placed in power, and they're protected and backed by the Belgian troops and the Belgian mercenaries and also the finances of the American government. So what you say is true. And Mulele was tricked by the Kasabubu regime and assassinated. Of course, I think he made a very serious mistake because
A man who wages a struggle for 5 years against an enemy certainly must know that enemy. And to allow himself to be duped into thinking that the enemy had turned the other cheek suddenly for no reason at all was a very serious mistake. But what you say is true. It's definite that the American government and the Belgian government, as are all the Western powers, are deeply involved in the exploitation and the many of the problems going on in Africa, Asia, and Latin America.
I understand that one of the key imports to the United States is cobalt. In fact, they get 95,000 tons. That is their percentage of requirements is 100%. That is, what they must import into the United States is 100%. This was according to a letter from the former director of the U.S. Bureau of Mines, Walter Hibbert. Now, I'm not. Now, the Congo, this is one of their major exports, as you know, the cobalt, that's what I said, I think. Cobalt is, and I'm wondering, and Hibbert went on to say, also in an article in the September or October issue of Mining Engineering, that one of the needs of America is to import minerals, certain minerals, at the lowest possible price. Now, I'm wondering if in fact cobalt is one of the minerals imported. Of course, we disagree that that price factor should be in this. That is that countries should interfere to put down, you know, revolutions in other countries. Because they probably still would be trading, you know, regardless of what political ideology was implemented in any country, left wing or otherwise. So, but I'm just wondering if in fact cobalt is imported into the United States from the Congo at least.
Well, I don't know this definitely, but I do know that cobalt 90 is one of the minerals that goes into the construction of atomic weapons. And so that I'm sure that the United States doesn't have a tremendous amount of this, if it has any at all. So I'm sure that the Congo is being exploited for that, as it is being exploited for many other things.
Mr. Gutman, thank you very much for your kind comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shields.
This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Irving Davis after station identification. Next week on Night Call, Del Shields with his guests, the police commissioner of our nation's largest city, a man recently released from prison who was convicted in 1951 for wartime espionage conspiracy, a black historian who speaks on the meaning and importance of the black heritage, a lost past, and a young hippie who says revolution for the hell of it. Monday, New York City Police Commissioner Howard R. Leary. Tuesday, Del Shields' guest is Morton Sobel, who was convicted 18 years ago for conspiracy against the United States government. Wednesday, Dr. Vincent Harding on the meaning and importance of black heritage, a lost past. Thursday, Del Shields discusses with listeners the importance of dialogue and discussion, the meaning of Night Call. And Friday, Abby Hoffman, a young hippie who says revolution for the hell of it. All this next week on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to guest Irving Davis about black power as an international concept. All Night Call collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
We'll take our next call from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Mrs. Yancey is hearing Night Call over WHAT. Mrs. Yancey?
Yes. I would like to ask Mr. Davis, what does he think of Opportunities Industrialization Center, which has been formed in Philadelphia, and it is now located in 60 cities throughout the United States? And what kind of effect does he think this will have on the black community?
Well, I'm sorry, I don't know that much about it. Perhaps if you could go into some of...
It's a vocational self-help training program. And we teach all the vocational skills to the grassroots type of individuals. It was started here, and now we have cities in New York. We have them in Washington. We have them in Massachusetts. We have them in Pittsburgh. We have them
who
in Omaha. We have them in California, Seattle, Washington, the various places.
Mrs. Yancey?
Mrs.
Yancey, who finances the program?
The Health Education and Welfare Administration in Washington. It used
to be the federal government.
The Office of Manpower and Automation.
In other words, the federal government.
Yes.
The federal government.
Yes.
Is private enterprise involved?
Yes, it is a private concern, but it is funded by the government.
But you receive no funds from any private sources, any companies or...
Very few. If we were not funded by the government, we would still be able to exist.
How would that happen?
Well, by some strange means, they would take up collections and what have you, through the churches and what have you.
Oh, you know this. This isn't an assumption on your part.
Well, yes, what is told to me, no one really knows what is going on. But this particular program has been in existence for, since, like, 1964. And it is quite large now, and I'm surprised that you have not heard of it, Mr. Davis.
Mm-hmm. No, I haven't heard of it, probably because it is federally funded, and I just can't...
But it's the biggest black organization of its kind in the country.
Well, okay, that doesn't mean anything.
Anyway. It's kind of great, like the presidents, the secretaries of labor, the governors, and everyone has been to visit this program. In fact, the one where I work.
I see.
Well, if the program is offering aid and offering assistance to black people in terms of adding to their particular skills so that they might become more involved in the economic system, I would say from this vantage point that it would be helpful.
Yes. Now, by the same token, Mr. Davis, a convoy of our members will be going to Africa to establish an OIC over there in February. What do you think of this?
Well, I think it's probably the same thing as the Peace Corps, and it's a known fact that some of the African governments have told the Peace Corps that they told the United States government that they don't want to have anything to do with the Peace Corps. And so I think that any federally funded program that goes into Africa or goes into any other part of the third world is going in purely for exploitating reasons.
I see. Well, like I was wondering myself, that's why I asked you, if we went over there with this self-help program, how they would really accept us, you know?
Well, first of all, I'm not African, and I'm not...
Under the skin, but then...
Excuse me.
One of those type of situations.
Excuse me. First of all, I'm not in Africa. I mean, I'm not of the African government.
Yes.
And I can't speak for the African people. But you asked my opinion as to what I thought about the program, and I gave you my opinion. Any program that's instituted by or supported and financed and so forth by the federal government that goes anywhere in the world is going for exploitative reasons.
True. Well, Mr. Davis, thank you kindly. And Mr. Davis,
mm-hmm.
if possible, if you can get back to Dell Shields and get my number, I will send you brochures and literature.
Thank you for calling, ma'am.
Okay.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Out to Nashville, Tennessee, Mr. Rivers is hearing Night Call over WVOL. Mr. Rivers?
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
Fine. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Yes, I'd like to pose one question to Mr. Davis. I'd like to know exactly, there are several advocates which go around, they give their own definition of black power. And I'd like to know exactly, in Mr. Davis's own words, just what black power is to him.
Yeah, well, I think it's very simple. I don't think there's anything mystical, and I don't think that we need to go into long, drawn-out discussions. It simply means power for black people, the same as people of other colors have power. And the important thing about black power is that it has become an international concept. It's become like a battle cry for oppressed people all over the world to do what is necessary to begin to wage a revolutionary struggle against the forces that are oppressing them. So a very simple definition is that it means power for black people.
Right. Now you're saying power for black people. Now, when black people have power,
mm-hmm.
Do you speak in monetary, in means of monetary funds or in government or how? Just what type of power are you talking about?
Well, first of all, we understand that it takes five solvencies. I mean, there are five solvencies in order for people to subsist. I mean, those solvencies are political power, economical power, social power, cultural power, religious power. When we talk about black power, we're talking about all forms of power. We're talking about power in which a people can control their own destiny and their own fate. Now, what happens is that the word revolution automatically comes into play once we talk about power. Because as Frederick Douglass said years ago, power conceives nothing without a demand. And what happens is that it becomes in the definition of our concept of revolution that we become confused. Because you see, a lot of people, as I was saying to Dale earlier, a lot of people see the ultimate of a revolution as being the armed struggle. And I maintain that the ultimate of a revolution is not the armed struggle. The armed struggle is that phase which frees and oppressed people to make the revolution. Now, what comes after that armed struggle is the ultimate. Now, what I mean by that, and I mean, I don't want to take up a lot of time, but this is very important, right. I think, is that we have to concern ourselves about what we want to mold after we obtain this power. And I think we have a responsibility to address ourselves to certain things that are going on under the present system that we don't want to become bed partners in. In other words, the atrocities committed against mankind. Right. For example, there is enough wealth on the face of this earth to feed everybody, every single individual. You see, there's no such thing as a population explosion and all this other nonsense that this government rams down our throats. There's more than enough for everybody. So therefore, we have to talk about a redistribution of wealth. There's enough wealth in the world, in the entire world, to take care of free housing, to take care of free medical care, to take care of free education. I mean, there's just enough to do this. But what happens is that the wealth of the world is rinsed into the hands of these select people, these 60 families particularly, you see?
Yeah.
And we say that what has to happen is that this wealth has to be taken from them. If they won't give it up willingly, and it's obvious that they won't give it up willingly, and they have all types of systems to protect themselves, then it has to be taken by force. It's just that simple. And we say that the oppressed people of the world, who constitute 3/4 of the earth, have a right to take that. Have a right to take that. Now, what white people feel and what white people are concerned about is another story. And what role they're going to play in that revolutionary struggle is a question that they have to address themselves to.
Now, tell me this. Does individual initiative have anything to do with obtaining power?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Not only, individual initiative, I think you've hit it right on the head, because that individual initiative has many, many outlets. The individual initiative for one to acquaint himself, to become educated, to become aware of what is going on throughout the world and not just resign it to his own little neighborhood or his own little home. The initiative to get involved in the struggle. You see, a lot of people always walk around talking about what can they do. Well, there's all levels of involvement in the struggle. There's no reason for some people to have never even given a dime to such an organization as the NAACP.
Right.
And I'm not condoning the NAACP, but I'm just talking about a sense of commitment. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Is that there are so many levels in which people can commit themselves 1 or 2 hours a week to a local organization or a national organization. We have typing skills. People have typing skills. And, I mean, if nothing else, the very least you can do is begin to contribute to the various organizations who are waging ideological struggles and trying to make some form of revolutionary change.
Do you think we as blacks, do you think that we need a type of free enterprising where, you know, something can be arranged in communities all over the country and communities of the world where the black people can get themselves together and do their own thing?
Well, definitely, I think, you know, that black people have a certain amount of freedom and a certain amount of togetherness and a certain amount of leeway to do their own thing, as you said.
Right.
But I think that to do their own thing has to be clearly defined. You see, because some people are right around the country talking about black capitalism. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And I mean, we have taken a position openly. Snick, in this Atlanta staff meeting, said that we are waging a struggle against the triple threat hyenas of racism, capitalism, and imperialism. So therefore, some people, black people, are running around the country and buying this Nixon line about black capitalism.
Which is a farce.
Sure, certainly it's a farce, because what that means, brother, is this. They're talking about black people working in jobs,
and getting shares in companies like General Motors and Chase Manhattan Bank. Now, these are the establishments that are exploiting Asia, Africa, and Latin America.
Right, right.
So what happens is that when you talk about black capitalism, what you're actually saying is that black people in this country become bad partners to the atrocities committed against their own brothers and sisters who comprise three-quarters of the earth.
Right.
See, and this is what I'm talking about, a culture teaching us a new set of values. Even if we don't understand all of the intricacies involved in the international arena, once we know the basic fundamental principles, you know, that we will not participate in the exploitation of man, and particularly of our people, then, I mean, we can take it on that level and begin to move to other understandings. But first of all, people have to have that type of concern about mankind, that concern about humanity, not to participate in the extortion and the exploitation and eventually the extermination of mankind.
Right, right.
Mr. Rivers, thank you for calling, sir.
Right, thank you. Fuck you.
This is Night Call in New York. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Irving Davis after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, Cuba 10 years later with Del Shields and his guest Jose Iglesias, an American of Cuban background who recently spent 3 months there to find out for himself how it really is. What do we Americans really know of Cuba and Cubans today? It isn't enough to see them as an anonymous mass, isolated and hidden by the towering figure of Fidel Castro. We must see them as people. What has his life been like during what Castro has called the 10 most difficult years? Is communism working? How does the individual see the revolution, his future, Fidel Castro? What will the renewed emphasis on agriculture mean for industrial development in Cuba? Del Shields and Jose Iglesias talk about Cuba as it really is today for the individual in the midst of the revolution. Tomorrow night on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to guest Irving Davis about black power as an international concept. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we'll take our next call from Indianapolis, Indiana. Mr. Russell is hearing Night Call over WTLC. Mr. Russell?
Hello.
Good evening, sir.
And how are you?
Fine, thank you.
I'd like to ask Mr. Davis that he had stated that this is an international problem with the control of the money and everything being in 60 families. And I would like to know, since this is an international problem, what steps would he take in forming an international plot to eliminate the other plot by these 60 families in order to free everyone of this control that these 60 families wield?
Well, first of all, I certainly wouldn't go into a discussion about international plots to eliminate the plot that is going on here or perpetuated by this government. I certainly wouldn't go into it on the air. And personally, I don't think that that's my job. The governments that who are being exploited, many of them have revolutionary parties and have armed struggle going right on in their country today. We just don't know about them because it isn't told to us through the news media. But the important issue, the important point to make here is that people in the third world, Asia, Africa, and Latin America, are rising up. And they're rising up to meet the oppressor in armed confrontation, which is the only way in which they can obtain their freedom. And that they are very closely linked with the struggle of black people in this country and people of color in this country, Indians, Mexicans, Puerto Ricans, and so forth. And that what is happening is that there is a definite link between the third world. Now, my position is that we in this country, we the oppressed in this country, must intensify that link up. We must become more concerned and more aware and understand more about it so that we can begin to clearly understand what we're up against and the type of struggle that is going to confront us.
I hope that answers your question.
After we realize this, how would we go about since these 60 families do obtain most of the money and have this in control, how would we go about changing this control of the money?
Well, there are many ways in which that can be done. I mean, once one understands that the monetary resources in this country are obtained through the domination of world trade, I mean, that's the very basis for the whole economical structure. And once we begin to talk about world trade and begin to acquaint ourselves with world trade, then we get into the area of what you're speaking of. I don't think that I can sit here on this program and, you know, and outline for you A, B, C, D exactly what that structure would be.
I understand this.
Nor do I think it would be wise to do that.
Yeah, but I just wondered, there is some means by which you can transfer this overbalance of money that these 60 families have down to the common person to where they would be able to control something so that they would have resources in which to help the international arena override this persuasive power that we see 60 families have over them?
Yeah, well, sure. There's definitely, we talked about power, man, and we said power can seize nothing without a demand, and so what we mean is that it has to be taken away from them. If they won't give it up willingly, it has to be taken from them. I mean, it's just that simple. If you're asking about a way.
Well, this is what I wanted to know, and one further question before I hang up. I'd like to know, after this power is changed, what would we say then would hold these countries that are now breaking away, what are going to hold them into an allowance to keep this from happening again?
Well, I think that's the whole concept of a correct political ideology and the concept of humanity. And I think that that's what I've been trying to talk about all evening, man, is that people must have a new set of values. There must be a new set of values. There must be a new era, you know, a renaissance amongst mankind, man. And I think it's happening in many of the places, other places of the world where people are being oppressed. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen examples of it. And I just think that it has to happen on a world level.
Yes, sir. By no other means than violence would be the way to resort to change this overbalance of power.
Well, I haven't seen it happen anywhere else in the world where this revolutionary change has come about by any other method than armed struggle. Now, if you know of some method, then I would urge you to get to work on it, you know.
Oh, well, no, I understand this because...
But I'm just saying that for myself, I haven't seen it anywhere any other way. I mean, Gandhi tried it, and look at India. He tried it the peaceful way. Martin Luther King tried it here, and look what happened to him. So, I mean, I just can't see any other way, man.
Well, I understand this because the United States itself was founded on violence, so...
Well, that's true. That's true.
We look at it from that standpoint, and so I just wondered if there was any other means, but after...
Excuse me.
What it is needing to change the money value from these 60 over to a larger population. That's the whole idea of this international...
That's a part of it. That's a part of it.
Okay.
That's a part.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, sir. Mr. Parler is hearing Night Call from Schenectady, New York, and he's hearing Night Call over WGY. Mr. Parler?
Yes.
Good evening.
It's Irving Davis.
Right.
Yes, well, I'm very glad that I can get to you. Now, I'm a lifetime socialist, and we had in this area a Friends of SNCC organization. We raised a lot of money that we sent to Atlanta. And I've always felt that I had great hopes in the you younger fellows picking up where the older ones are leaving off in the radical fringe and doing something about it, and I'm sure glad to hear you talking this way. It seems to me you should define this a little closer in being more positive in exactly how this can be done. I think this isn't too difficult if we think about getting rid of the rent, interest, and profit system and substituting for it one where we produce for use instead of profit. Now, don't you feel this way?
Well, definitely. I mean, the profit, as I said, is the basis of, you know, that's the first attribute of capitalism. You know, capitalism can't exist without a profit as it can't exist without someone to exploit.
That's right. Now, have you read, possibly you've heard about the book by Servan Schreiber, who's a Frenchman, talking about the peril of the American power of American capitalism. The name of the book is The American Challenge.
Yes, I mentioned that earlier.
Okay, well, this goes along the same trend that you've been talking about, the power of American capitalism. The British imperialism was easy to see because it was real estate. But our one with money is a little more subtle.
Exactly, precisely.
The survey in Schreiber, and I believe he's correct, the boys who were exporting the capital from this country to take control of the rest of the world are getting into the computer business where they have a stranglehold on societies. And I think you're talking about the same thing. It should be broken up.
Right.
But under democratic control by the peoples of the world rather than by individuals. You agree to this?
Exactly.
Oh, boy, that's so nice to hear you talk this way.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Because some of us old-timers have been waiting for this for a long, long time. Thank you a lot now.
Thank you for calling.
Right now.
And we'll take our last call of the night from San Diego. Mr. Bamer is hearing night call over KOGO-FM. Mr. Bamer?
Hello.
Good evening, sir.
Hello, am I on the air?
Yes, you are, sir.
There was some comments made about cobalt and where we obtained it. We obtained most of our cobalt through Belgium, probably from the Congo. And the situation there is probably similar to the situation in Vietnam. Now, North Vietnam is one of the few substantial sources of tungsten, which is one of the most vital metals for our armaments industry. And that is, I think, one of the principal reasons we are in Vietnam now. The only other very large sources of tungsten are in China and Red China, and of course we have difficulty in getting it through them.
Right.
So that, and also, of course, in the Middle East, we have oil. It's
exactly
the old story that natural resources control international policy to a far greater extent than the average individual is aware of.
Right, and on that same point, I'd like to make a point here, if I may, Dale.
Sure.
This brings us to like this whole issue around Nigeria and Biafra.
Right.
And like we've had this big thrust here recently to save the starving children in Biafra. But what about the starving children in Mississippi and Alabama? What about the starving children that have been starving in this country for 400 years?
I'm with you.
And I'd like for the American public to know that we're pretty sure that this Save the Starving Children in Biafra was backed by the federal government. Now, anybody that knows what's going on in Nigeria knows that Nigeria had been controlled by the British for years. And what has happened is that France and the United States have moved into to that area through the Igbo tribe, through Biafra, where there are rich oil deposits. So the United States' only concern in Nigeria and Biafra is the oil deposit, which they only have about 9 more years in reserve. And I mean, on that whole issue about what I tried to raise about what about the starving children, I'd just like to read a letter that I received here recently. It's very short. It says, in the whole state of Alabama, only SRRP is working grassroots in the backwoods where the unhelped, unreached people live. With our small staff of 3, we are struggling to continue to teach these people the way to get welfare benefits and agricultural help that is their due, but which Southern federal employees maneuver to keep from them. Children and adults are literally starving to death because no one cares about them except SRRP, and SRRP is about to go under.
Mr. Bamer, thank you so much for calling. Mr. Davis, thank you for being our guest on Night Call.
Thank you, Dale.
This is Del Shoes in New York. Good night and peace.
Listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, Cuba 10 years later, with Del Shields and his guest, Cuban expert Jose Iglesias. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.